Time for our roundtable discussion about Wisconsin wildlife and nature with our three regular guests, Pat Durkin, freelance writer and editor and president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. Patrick, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. I appreciate it.
Also with us, Dean Bortz, the editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News. And Dean, it's good to see your smiling face.
Good to be back, Larry. Always good to be here.
Oh, great to have you here. Tim Isley, our third guest, freelance outdoor writer, private landowner in Crawford County, one of the original founding members of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association back in 1976. Tim Isley, welcome back to you.
Thank you, Larry. Glad to be here. Pleased to join with my friends.
We have a lot of topics to talk about today. We'd love to have you join the conversation. You can call us. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Tim, let's start with you. You just left the Natural Resources Board meetings going on right now. What's been going on so far?
Well, it's really interesting, Larry, because today is the monthly meeting for the Natural Resources Board. These are seven citizens appointed by the governor to set policy for the DNR, and so they're having the meeting today, and it is by computer, by online, so it's not in person. I think they're going to start with in-person meetings at the June meeting, which it's usually about the fourth Wednesday of the month. But a couple of the things this morning, one of the biggest things is that we have two new board members who have been appointed by the governor. And the two people, one is Sharon Adams. She's from Milwaukee, and she's been active in conservation in the past and 4-H and natural resources. And so she's going to be taking the place of the previous board member whose term has expired. And so she is sitting on the board today, and so she is participating. The other new member, however, is Sandra D. Nass from Ashland. She's also very active in conservation, been active in the Conservation Congress and County Deer Advisory Committees. But she was introduced today, but she is not there participating today because she will be replacing Dr. Fred Prenn, who is the chairman of the board. And because the new board members will have to be confirmed by the state Senate. And because the vacancy for Mrs. Adams was vacant, so she is sitting at the board. However, Fred Prenn is still staying on the board until the confirmation from the Senate comes on Mrs. Nass. So, but Sandra Nass is watching by computer. So it's interesting because there's a controversy on whether a person, their term is up as of May 1st, and the new person is starting May 1st. So whether that person should still be in the seat, such as Dr. Prenn. It's happened in the past, and a good example was Steve Willett, an attorney from up north, had been on the board, and then he stayed on until his replacement was confirmed. However, then she watched for over 2 years. And so there's a controversy there on whether that's legitimate, whether it's ethical for a person whose term has technically expired to still be on the board. But Dr. Prenn is chairing the board meeting this morning.
So another thing. Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
The meeting is still going on. So there's a lot of things on the agenda that are coming up. One of the most interesting things is that one of the agenda items was approval of the elk management plan. They had looked at it last month and they tabled it till this month. So now this month it was expected they would be approving it. Well, they didn't approve it. They've tabled it again until June. So there's a lot of interest. I mean, in elk, there's interest in watching elk, especially in September and hearing the bugling. There's interest in hunting, and there's interest from a standpoint of crop depredations. They're very concerned about crop depredations, especially in the Jackson County area. So they've decided they're going to table this until the next month and see what they're going to get some more information from the Department of Natural Resources. But it's so interesting to find out what people are interested in and the discussion that takes place there. So really, it's a really interesting meeting, and it's one that citizens ought to know about because they're setting policy for the DNR.
Yeah, for sure. Well, one of the things that probably got discussed at one point or another was the wolf hunt. That's still top of mind. Pat, what are your thoughts on the wolf hunt?
I guess my overall thought, Larry, is I really thought it should not have been held. And when it was held, the two big things that stand up in my mind was that, in effect, they doubled the number of permits out there, doubled the number of hunters who bought licenses going out there to hunt than what had been done in the past. And then we had this 24-hour window to register wolves, and in many cases it was intentionally pushed to the final second and final minutes, so we had a delayed registration process for some people, which made sure that quota got overshot. And I thought it was really unfortunate. That was my opinion. I wrote about it a few times. Not all people carried my column on that one, but I thought it was an unfortunate situation for our state, and that it created, some real problems going down the road here and showing whether Wisconsin can scientifically manage its wolf population. And I think we can. We had a great track record going into this year. Our first three seasons were done very effectively. DNR did a great job doing it, but for some reason the DNR sat on its hand when the board talked about raising the number of permits. And I wrote that was not, I didn't think that was a very brave thing to do, to let it go forward the way they did. So that's my opinion, Larry.
Yeah. Dean, what are your thoughts on it?
There was a bunch of, I guess I'll say helter-skelter going on there at the last minute, because it came about because of a court ruling. My thought is that had the DNR followed state law and put the season on beginning in early January instead of not doing anything about it, this could have come off a lot more smoothly and without a lot of the criticism that we're seeing right now. We knew back in August that wolves would be delisted. The Interior Department, Fish and Wildlife Service told us several times that was going to happen. They didn't give us any specific dates. We didn't see that until, let's see, was it early October? I think like October 6th, the Fish and Wildlife Service finally listed that information in the Federal Register, which made it official. And then there's a 60-day waiting period from that point, which made it January 4th, when wolves were officially delisted. Some folks within the DNR at the lower level, you know, had told me at that time that, yeah, we got plenty of time to put on a season. We can put on a application process. We can open the window, let people apply, put on application process, get permits out. Got plenty of time. Those voices were hushed up shortly after that. And we didn't hear any more of that that viewpoint from the higher level within the DNR. And nothing happened. And so when nothing happened, then we had an outside group sue, say, hey, we need to put, you know, the wolves are delisted. State law says if wolves are delisted, we put on a season. Judge ruled favorably on that lawsuit. And so then with just, you know, minutes, I'll say minutes, I mean, that's an exaggeration, but with just days to go before the end of February, all of a sudden the DNR found itself trying to put on a wolf season, and that was just a mess. So
yeah.
I think this could have all been avoided.
Yeah, I know Nick had emailed and wondered what your thoughts were about the DNR's failure to consult with the Chippewa tribes about the hunt.
Do we know? I mean, I've never asked anybody. I assumed that some calls were made. Do we know that the DNR didn't talk to the tribes, or is this just being assumed?
Well, everything I
heard. Yeah, I'm not sure. This is an emailer, Pat.
Yeah, everything I heard talking to people I talked to is that they were not consulted. And the thing I think we should point out, too, is that this was a decision that came down from the Fish and Wildlife Service was for the Great Lakes states, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Only Wisconsin pushed forward with the season this year. There's still nothing on the books in Michigan or Minnesota to even look at it for this fall. So I thought you could argue, and many people did, that the DNR's position was that they announced in December of, I think around December 6th, that they would wait until the fall to get the season on, you know, rolling. And by that time, they'd consult with the tribes, consult with everyone they had to talk to, and do it real deliberately, real slowly. There was no reason to push this thing through the way they did, the way it was done. So I think the fact you're looking, can look at our neighbor states, and they're still not planning for this fall. So I guess that's, I think, worth keeping in mind.
Well, let's take, I want to make sure we talk about some other topics as well. We can certainly come back to wolves. Last time we talked was, the first topic was the pandemic. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the sort of the lingering effects of outdoor activities. Dean, I think Jill told me you're having problems getting your musky reels reloaded.
Yeah. You know, and I really, I mean, when we've done, when I say we, I mean, not just folks here at Outdoor News and Tim and Pat, but around the country, folk, you know, the outdoor beat writers have talked about the shortage of equipment, gear, number of people who have taken to the outdoors over the past year, put a little bit of a hurt on some of the supplies. But I didn't expect to not be able to go into Island City, Island Sports in Managua, and not get my reels loaded like I've done every year. And I even went in there, I think it was early April, and I thought, well, I better get in there and get these things loaded up just to have it ready. And Kurt goes, you know, the owner, Kurt Justice, he says, oh, geez, Dean, I'm sorry, I can't help you with that. You know, I said, oh, okay, well, if you're busy, you know, I can come back a different day. He goes, it's not going to matter what day you come back. He's like, I can't get bulk line. So I've been going to all my friends who fish a lot and to see if they had any extra line. And luckily, I got a hold of Steve Hiding. And if you know Steve, he works for, you know, editor of Muskie Hunter magazine. So I was kind of hoping that he did have extra line, and he does. And so he's going to help me out on that respect. But yeah, you might have to go to garage sales and look for spools of line if you need to spool up.
Oh man, Pat, that, well, of course the muskie season starts.
Saturday.
It's about
29. In northern Wisconsin.
In northern Wisconsin, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is where I always think, I mean, there's lots of muskies in southern Wisconsin, but I always kind of, I like being in the north.
Yeah.
Maybe the one of the flow edges to fish. Patty, out, are you going out? What do you think the season's going to be like this year for muskies? Well,
as most people know me, I'm not much of a muskie fisherman. I built myself a roach roller boat about 15 years ago, and I still use it maybe twice a year for muskie roach rolling. I've only caught one muskie with it. But I never profess to be a musky person. I'm more of a bluegill, crappie, perch, and walleye person. And my number one favorite fish, though, overall, is pike. I just think the pike's a nasty fish. I like catching it. A lot of people don't like it, but I think that is one, in my book, an admirable fish. You know, he fights you even inside the boat. So I think fishing is. I find this whole COVID stuff fascinating, Larry. Like, I was talking to some friends the other day, trying to get turkey loads, you know, turkey shotgun loads. Very hard to find. People bought out ammo like crazy. I thought a lot of it was going to be attributed to, you know, during the Trump years, we had a lot of people worrying about what would happen after Trump. So they panic bought ammo then. Then COVID comes along, and they're panic buying ammo during COVID. Thinking that they might need something to protect their home, who knows what. But when you can't go into Fleet Farm these days and you can't find turkey loads, you think this is a weird combination of circumstances we have here between COVID and all the Second Amendment stuff that's going on. It's a very fascinating time for hunting and fishing. I mean, for God's sake, if you look at like Dean's example of fishing line, I never would have thought that was coming.
Tim, what about you?
You got to use that Winchester long beard to protect your stash of toilet paper from a year ago.
Right. Good point.
Oh, man. Tim, bring you in. You're a fisherman. You do a little fishing.
Sure. I've done a lot of musky fishing, not a lot of musky catching, but my favorites really are perch and bluegills. They're so good to eat, and we've had some good times fishing some of the bluegills over on the backwaters of the Mississippi River, and they are so good. They're just really great. But going back to the pandemic, one of those things was that because of now a lot of things were on computer or by cell phone or whatever, that we could have contact with some of these meetings, which otherwise we wouldn't be able to. And one of the specific ones that I'm thinking of was the CDAC meeting. I was able to participate or listen to the CDAC meeting over in Crawford County, where we all own property, and listen to them talk rather than having to drive the 2 hours over there and 2 hours back. So some of these meetings that were taking place, and I think that's something that in the future should have more opportunities. Same thing with the Wisconsin Conservation Hall of Fame, the induction ceremonies. People from all over the state were able to listen to those ceremonies, and they didn't have to drive up to Stevens Point. So that was one of the benefits. Some of the drawbacks, though, we all know. But one of the things is personal contact. You know, when you're at meetings, you have those personal contacts with people. You hear things. And also then some of the DNR biologists weren't able to do the surveys. You know, last year, the grouse survey, the waterfowl survey a year ago, they didn't do those. So I think, you know, there's drawbacks, but there's a few positives.
Taking a look at the world of wildlife today with our three outdoor writers, Tim Isley, Dean Bortz, and Pat Durkin. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in. Questions or comments as we talk about a whole broad range of outdoor topics here, I'll join in at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Stick a call. Bill in Superior, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I hope you can hear me okay. Say, my question is, and I've got a follow-up for it, my question is when is the DNR going to release the actual number, the population, estimated population of the wolves in the state of Wisconsin? And the reason I ask is this. Based off of the numbers for the harvest and hunters, that hunters in 2 days depleted almost 20% of the entire state's population, saying that, you're basically saying in the first 2 days of deer hunters, you know, deer season, that with thousands and thousands more hunters, that hunters in the first 2 days killed well over 300,000 deer. The estimation population in whatever the DNR is calling for numbers just does not make sense.
All right. Dean Bortz, what do you think?
Yeah. First question he had was about the wolf minimum count, or I guess now we're switching from minimum count to eventually population estimate, but I think they're in the transition between the two. So I'll still use minimum count. I don't know that they did a survey in this past winter or the winter before. The winter before they might have. That would be prior to COVID. But because of COVID, they may not have done a survey this past winter. So I don't know that we're going to have an actual up-to-date population estimate at any point, but if we do, it probably would be coming out right about now or very shortly, because they'll usually wrap those surveys up late March, early April, and then get together and do their settling out of what they come up with. And as far as, let's see, the second part was, I guess, the rate at which the wolves were harvested by trappers, hunters in February. So I'll go back to my earlier statement where I used minimum count. So everybody who's paying attention to wolves in Wisconsin should just keep in mind minimum count. That's not a population estimate. So if the DNR says we have, 1,253 to 1,315 wolves, that's the minimum count. There are more wolves in Wisconsin than that. We don't know what the upper limit is. So it's hard to say how rapidly or quickly wolves were harvested based on the size of the population. We just can't really do that, I don't think.
You know, I don't have it right in front of me at the moment, but that I don't know what you guys think of that new study that talked about the correlation between the wolf population and deer car collision rates. When Pat, maybe go ahead and comment on that.
Yeah, I'll kind of real quickly summarize. The study basically said that with wolves in the various Wisconsin counties up north, in those counties with wolves, deer car collisions declined. And, you know, people right away start speculating what that actually means. And I guess I was skeptical that they could really find a good connection there. But then you look into it a little bit and you realize, well, this study was edited by a University of Wisconsin, well-respected biologist, involved UW people who really know their stuff when it comes to wolves and deer. And when you look at some of the, you know, I was skeptical that they could take this number, these numbers of deer vehicle collisions, Larry, and then conclude that the wolf's presence was causing a decline in deer vehicle collisions. Because it's, to me, like, how do you take just these numbers and then start speculating on wolf behavior and deer behavior and how that affects where they travel and stuff? But just by coincidence, it was really interesting. I looked into this a little bit, and there's also a study that where they actually had tracked, you know, they put GPS collars on wolves and on elk. And then they start making some assumptions here and there in this other study. And what they found out was that, you know, they really did show a high number of where these wolf kills were on elk were showing up along the highways. And the one thing we know about deer and wolves is that once deer figure out where wolves are operating, they stay out of that area, or at least they don't spend much time in that area. They start hanging around more in the fringe of where the wolf pack runs. So it's conceivable to my, in my mind, that this analysis that these scientists did was a really, really comprehensive analysis. I think it was like 22 years of data looking at deer vehicle collisions, deer populations, wolf population per county, deer population by county. My initial reaction was skepticism. I think it's smart for people in my profession to be skeptical anytime you come across something where there's just an opinion or science. But then to be fair about it, look into it a little bit. And I guess the more I looked into this, the more I thought, they might be onto something. I think people are going to – my only worry so often with these is some people will read these numbers and start thinking, there's our solution. We just got to start putting more wolves – out across southern Wisconsin, which I think you can try it, but I don't think it's going to work just because of human tolerance and all these other factors that come into the whole wolf dynamic. But I wish people could just read the science, stick to that science, and not go beyond what the researchers themselves actually say. And that's where you always get into all these interpretations of stuff that drive people like me crazy.
Yeah, sometimes the lead paragraph or maybe the headline, you need to read beyond the headline and read the actual stories themselves and then look into it further, for sure. Now, Tim, you wanted to chime in.
Well, thanks, Larry. I was just going to mention that I think that one of the question as far as getting some of these numbers, as I understand it, the department has two wolf committees. One's a wolf advisory committee, and the other, I think, is working on the management plan. And as I recall from one of the recent board meetings, that there's a lot of that information that they're going to be working on. It's not going to be coming out until they have this information together. So I don't think we're going to get some of those numbers for a little while yet that they're working on this. But I think for a really good background, I was really interested. There was a report that came out from Wisconsin's Green Fire. And these are a lot of scientists who used to work for DNR, used to work for the university and other organizations. And they came out with a paper after they looked at everything. I was impressed by it. And I thought they had a really good analysis of the recent wolf hunt. and what their comments were on wolves. So I would suggest that people take a look.
Whoops, Tim froze up.
For the Wisconsin Fire and look for their statement, the report that they did on the recent wolf hunt.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But as long as we got you there, Tim, the DNR, there's two new management plans, right, that they're talking about?
Well, it's a management plan that they're putting together, and they have a committee which is working on that management plan, as I remember.
Okay, all right. Well, this county CDACs, or County Deer Advisory Council, have made their final quota recommendations. And, Pat, what are your thoughts on those recommendations and so forth?
I haven't actually seen all the different recommendations yet, and I think Tim can correct me, but I'm pretty sure the DNR will be taking the final CDAC recommendations to the board for their approval in June. As you might remember, a year ago, that created quite a mess, really, where the board came in some of us say a little bit illegally as far as open meeting laws go, and reworked some of the final recommendations from the CDAC, the different counties. So it'll be interesting to see in June how much the board comes in after the fact and changes those numbers again. And then what we also can't cover as well usually is how much goes on between right now and those final recommendations, because I'm already hearing from some of the counties up north that the DNR is already working to reduce some of their recommendations, reduce the quotas, because they're afraid that they'll run into a roadblock with primarily on the board on Greg Kazmierski, one of the board members. And so it'll be an interesting few weeks here, and then we'll see where it goes.
We had a question about sturgeon. We just lost that. You can join in, by the way, with your questions or comments. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I didn't get the gist of that sturgeon question, so that caller may call back. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Tim, you just got back from Alaska. What are some of the hot outdoor topics going on up there?
Well, it was really interesting. We were visiting our son up in Alaska in Juneau, Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was really interesting to see the different species of wildlife up there, and saw some bald eagles up there like we've got crows down here. So it's really a different place to see a lot of different wildlife up there. And we enjoyed it up there. But of course, they're based on tourism up there. Are all these cruise ships going to and from the Juneau area, and of course without the cruise ships, that's sort of hurting the tourism up there, the Mendenhall Glacier. Is this frozen?
Yeah, we're freezing. I tell you what, I think we're going to get you on by phone, Tim, so we'll make that shift. Pat and Dean are still okay there, so we'll continue with that. But Tim Isley, we'll switch him over to phone and get him back, because I wanted to ask him some more about that trip. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear your experiences, what's going on in the outdoors for you, what questions you have about what's going on out there. I hope you'll join us. Again, 1-800-642-1234. Were you guys catching any fish out there? Pat, what's biting in your area right now?
Well, I'm going to try to find out this weekend. I have some grandkids coming in to take care of for a couple of days. So I'm hoping to get them out in my little boat and try for bluegills or something. But unfortunately, you know, I found that my wife and I moved from Opaca to Eau Claire back in December. And now that it's spring, we've basically been spending the past few months setting up our new house. Okay. And all the little chores to come with it, so I haven't gotten out as much as I'd hoped to.
My wife is trying to help
you. Well, Dean, here.
When it shows up, you're going to make this
Yeah, we need to have Tim leave the call or leave the show and then come back. This is one of the many issues associated with hosting a show. Dean, what about your fishing? Do you have any other line you can use other than
Before we hit the fishing part, let me back the truck up a little bit, because as Tim is struggling with the technology on his end, you know, thinking back earlier about the pandemic stuff, I mean, when your producer Jill alerted us to the fact that we'd be doing this a little bit differently this time, I'm thinking, oh man, I just learned how to use Zoom. I mean, I'm an old dog, and you're trying to teach me a new trick. And I just learned how to use Zoom, and now I got to learn how to use Google Meet. Well, I didn't know if I could deal with that, but it actually turned out to be fairly easy. All I had to do was punch a couple of buttons. So, yeah, I was a little nervous about that, but so far my end is holding up, so I'm glad about that. Fishing-wise, I can tell you in the fishing that I've done so far, I've done more muskrat, goose, duck watching than actual fish catching. I mean, I haven't had a lot of luck so far, but that's because I don't, you know, instead of fishing when fishing should be good, I end up fishing when I have time to fish. Mm-hmm. And that's usually not the best time to go fishing. I've been trying here in the middle of the day, and I've seen some really nice hatches of, I don't know if I can say a hatch, because these perch were 4 to 6 inches long, you know, not long enough to really want to keep any of them. But I've been seeing clouds of perch following my lures to the shore or to the boat. And I'm writing that information down so I don't forget where they are, maybe in August or September when they might grow up a little bit, or next spring when maybe they'd be 10, 11 inches. So that's, my fishing has all been hoping for the best in the future so far.
Well, yeah, I can relate to that. Although there's been a pretty good bluegill bite in the Madison area lakes here in the last week or couple of weeks. It's the bedding.
Yeah, my friends have been doing good. I mean, you know, if I can tell you about what other folks are doing, I mean, like I live in the Monaco Woodruff area, and you know, people there have been just doing great. You know, the walleye action's been holding up. The bluegills and crappies have been, you know, it came into the shallows. Crappies moved off a little bit now, but the bluegills are going to be in there for a little while. Everybody's been doing really well. So that's good to see. And with the muskie opener coming up on the 29th, I have high hopes that we might at least see a fish, if not catch a couple. So once I get my reels loaded.
Okay. Well, let's take a call. Brian in Richland Center. Hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in kind of the south central part of the state, and I hunt predominantly in Jefferson and Dane County. And I was just calling to hear what your guys' thoughts were as far as the turkey season this year. I had a season A, and I actually have an end of the year tag here for season F, which just started today, and it seemed to be really, really slow as compared to previous years for the early season. Just kind of wondering if you guys have been hearing similar things or thoughts on that.
Yeah. Dean, let's start with you.
I hunt primarily in northern Wisconsin, zone 7. I do usually buy tags for southern Wisconsin. When I say southern to me is Tomahawk. but once in a while, I'll get down to Mount Horeb area. I haven't heard anything from the Mount Horeb area. I've hunted in Vilas County and Lincoln County, and we never see a lot of fast action in northern Wisconsin. We have birds, and if you stay with it, you should have a chance at a gobbler somewhere along the 7 days that you're going to be hunting. I couldn't say it's slower than this year. What I did notice is any birds that I saw in Vilas County or Lincoln County were primarily jakes or gobblers. I didn't see a lot of hens. So I don't know. And other folks have been telling me that too, that they're just not seeing a lot of hens, and bird numbers in general seem to be down a little bit from the past. And we didn't have snow depths were not a concern this past year, but everybody's kind of wondering if that 12 to 14, 15 days of intense cold might have knocked some birds out of the picture for us.
Yeah, that could be. Pat, what about you?
I think Dean had a report just in the most recent Outdoor News about the season running a little bit behind the pace of last year. I think Dean wrote that, but my overall take was so far is I used to be a really into the early season hunting, and more recently I've gotten into the where I usually don't start getting serious to the fourth period and then continuing through to this final time period. And the thing historically we should keep in mind is Wisconsin's turkey hunting, turkey populations and turkey hunting success really peaked around 2007, that 2008 period. And it was in the low 50s back then. Well, we haven't hit the low 50s in over a decade now as far as the harvest. And last year, I think we ended up around 44, 45,000 in the harvest. This year, it looks like we'll probably be a little bit below that. But I can't complain. I got out in the third period, missed a shot. I hadn't missed a turkey in over almost two decades. And so I was put back in my place pretty quickly this season. Then this past week, I had a really fun time guiding a good friend of my youngest daughter. She got her first turkey. She got it like in 20 minutes on Saturday. It was just a wonderful experience. And then on Tuesday, I got out in the final period here in zone four, period five. And I got a jake yesterday morning at 6 o'clock. So in my experience so far, I'm at 25% on the number of permits I have. And so I can't complain. I got, typically Wisconsin hunters, we average about overall 20% success rate during the turkey season. But as far as the caller's question, it might be down a little bit. But turkeys, they've now settled into their routines here in Wisconsin. They were brought back starting in the 70s. And I think what we're seeing now is about what we can probably expect to see for the time being. It's just not going to be back what it was, back in the early 2000s to mid 2000s.
Yeah. What about numbers of licenses? Do you guys know off the top of your head if we're seeing more turkey hunters out there?
That's not something that I've checked on lately. Aren't we normally around like about 200, 250,000 turkey hunters? I don't know if we're still there or not.
Well, it's kind of confusing now because we sell everyone who wants to hunt can apply by early December to hunt. And then once those tags all get sent out, then we can buy the leftover tags. So like people like me, I have my regular tag from period three in zone three. And now I have since then bought four more tags for $10 a piece. So it starts getting, I'd have to go back and look at actually how those number of permits sold translates to number of actual individual hunters. I'm not sure how easy that is to do. I'm sure the DNR has that total somewhere, but I think Dean's right. That total number of tags is somewhere in the 240, 230 range. But again, I could be mistaken on that, but I think that's about right.
Taking a look at the world of wildlife on the show today with Dean Boards, Patrick Durkin, and Tim Isley. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining in. Questions, comments, maybe an experience to share in the outdoors, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. We were talking about turkeys, and I see Robert in Elroy wondered if the increase in the number of people being outside, walking dogs, whatever, tramping through the woods and so forth, has affected the turkey population. I don't see. Well, go ahead, Dean.
I would. I guess my first reaction would be probably not. And I guess when you started went into the question, I sort of anticipated the caller going into whether it'd be affecting the harvest. And, you know, I wouldn't think that would be the case. You don't see a lot of people walking dogs at 5:30 in the morning through the middle of the county forest or, you know, somebody else's farm fields. So I wouldn't expect harvest to be affected as far as reproductive success. I just don't think so. You know, these hens, if they're going to, you know, they get on their nest, they're going to be out of the way. They picked a spot where they don't usually run into anybody runs into them. So I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe Pat's got a different idea.
Pat?
Yeah, I basically agree with Dean. I don't think it would be a whole lot different this year. But, you know, there is some interesting research in recent years, though, about the impact of just hiking and bicycling and being present in these areas where wildlife, you know, live. Whether it's where they've done some interesting research is out in the western states where they get started actually documenting how far away wildlife tend to move away from these frequently traveled trail systems that people take, you know, with their mountain bikes and stuff. So, you know, just because we aren't shooting birds and shooting elk and deer doesn't mean we're not that our presence isn't having an effect on them. But I think overall, you still think, you know, as far as how it's affecting things this year, I think, well, it's hard to say that this year would be a whole lot different from previous years, that the animals and birds that have been around humans and been around human activity, they probably made their adjustments over time and they're probably still adjusting this year. But yeah, I have a hard time believing that you'd see a significant difference in 1 year like that.
I think we got Tim Isley back aboard here. Tim, maybe you could comment on your turkey season and some of the thoughts here that we've been just commenting on relating to turkeys.
You bet, Larry. Thanks. I wanted to add just a word. I think that the original call that came in and the concern on turkey population, I think there may be something to that, and it's something that I want to talk to more people who are out during the season. But I had an inquiry from a reader who said that he's over in Viroqua area, and he had said that during this past year, driving around the roads, normally they'd see birds, but not in the sizable numbers that they've been seeing them before, and very little gobbling. And he was mentioning to me he had a friend who has some prime turkey habitat down near Boscobel, and this gentleman and his son had always turkey hunted and been successful, and they've been out hunting regularly during two periods, and they hadn't seen anything. They wondered why they were out hunting. So I don't know if this is an isolated instance. I can tell you that from my instance, and I think it may be a little bit biased because we have land over in Crawford County, but we had a logging operation that went on last fall. And so then this spring, they were in there cleaning up some things and doing some grading on the roads and putting in some erosion control bars. So I was over there the first period. Being a landowner, I had put in, and I had a first period permit. And I can tell you that for the first 2 days, I never saw a turkey. I never saw a hen. I never saw a gobbler or anything. But there was some equipment going on down in the woods. So I honestly can't say. Did have a permit for the third period. I bought a leftover permit for the third period. Is out then. And again, I just didn't have birds around me. My youngest brother was hunting in a different location on the same property, and he was able to get a gobbler. But I have not seen the number of birds or the number of hens. Usually you'd find a bunch of hens coming through, and I haven't seen that. So I don't know if it's an isolated instance, or if there's something to it. But as I say, this gentleman from Viroqua was saying that he and another friend of his were concerned that they weren't seeing birds, and I think there may be something to it.
Yeah, Scott Craven has commented on that in the past on the show, where in his area things are just there just aren't as many turkeys, and I've kind of seen the same in some of my own hunting down around Janesville. area of Wisconsin where there aren't as many birds. I guess the best part about turkey hunting for me is a chance to go out and sit with my daughter and chat and listen to the birds and see the occasional deer or the fox or the coyote or whatever come wandering through, and they're not aware that you're there, and talk about life. I think that might be the best part of turkey hunting for me. I really don't care if I get a bird or not.
Yeah. To be sitting at the base of an oak tree and in a woods, you've got some birds maybe gobbling in the far distance. You know, you might have a rough grouse around you if you're lucky, and to watch the warblers coming through the woods and all the different birds. It's just a wonderful time in the woods. Good time.
Yeah. Bird migration. Somebody brought up a comment on that. What are you seeing in your area of the world, Dean Boards?
Well, I have been impressed with the number of hummingbirds that I have seen in the last, three, 4 days. Right now, in the last couple of days, I've been up in Bayfield County working from up here at a friend's place, hanging out, and Sharon feeds hummingbirds. I've never taken the time to do that, so maybe that's one of the reasons she's attracted so many hummingbirds around here. But holy smokes, I mean, you know, you get daylight and dusk, there are hundreds of hummingbirds around here. But I've also seen red-breasted grosbeaks, meadowlarks. Let's see, what else have we seen? Well, robins, of course, but no, the hummingbirds have impressed me. They're neat little critters.
Yeah, they are indeed. Pat, you were going to add something.
Yeah, you know, mentioning turkeys and stuff, the one thing I really love about the spring turkey season, Larry, is I wrote about this just about 2 weeks ago, was turkeys, they make people happy. You know, you read these post-season surveys the DNR does, where they go out and they send out, I can't remember how many thousands of surveys to people to get their reactions. And in recent years, you know, and you go back even longer, doesn't matter what kind of season we had, as far as, I think like last year we were in the mid 40 range for a harvest, and when hunters were asked to rank the season, they gave it a 7 out of 10. And I wish I could go back and find the surveys from the peak years of 2007 and 8 in that period. But when I talked to the DNR guy who does those surveys, they said the results on turkey hunting are so consistent year after year that hunters are happy. I don't know if it's just being out in the spring woods, listening to the catbirds calling and the whippoorwills calling before dawn. There's just something magical about the spring woods. And I think sometimes I wish deer hunters could take that same approach, that, you know, no matter what happens during deer season, let's be happy about it. Because the turkey hunters seem to have it, because it's basically the same group of people hunting turkeys and deer, and yet the same group of people will be grumpy after deer season and happy after turkey season. You know, go figure that one out.
Well, yeah, I don't know about that either. I wish I did, but all I know is that it's hard to be in a bad mood when you're out in the spring, early spring. You're in maybe a blind before the sun comes up, and then you watch this, you know, the life unfold. It's an absolutely mesmerizing time for me, and I love it. Talking nature and wildlife on the show today with our three guests, Tim Isley, freelance outdoor writer, who was one of the founding members of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. Pat Durkin is the current president of that association. He's also a freelance writer and editor. And Dean Bortz is editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News. So we're talking about a lot of different things today on the show. I know we've been asked to talk about a favorite fishing story and or hunting story. And I gave those guys time over the news break to think about that a little bit. I bet we could talk all day about that. But certainly we have taking other questions as well, and we have some online I want to get to as well. But if you would like to join us, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. As long as we were kind of on turkeys before the news break, we got a caller or someone emailed that they have found in Grant County that raccoons are eating turkey eggs, and he thinks raccoons might be a reason for the decline in population.
Yeah, one of the interesting dynamics that happens with the turkey population, and this is not uncommon to any reintroduced species, is you typically see the population really boom in the early years. You know, they're introduced into the landscape. The other predators and scavengers out there really haven't learned how to deal with them yet, learned how to target them yet. And so, like, the numbers we used to see back in the 90s, for example, that'll never happen again. And I think we have to get kind of used to the idea, because now that we're here, you know, the raccoons they definitely have learned how to prey on turkeys, and so have the avian predators. You know, they pick off the poults, and the turkeys in response start changing their behavior. And so there'll always be this ebb and flow of predation, and then the turkeys responding, and then the predators responding to the turkeys responding, and back and forth it goes. And so I just have learned over the years, whether it's fish or wildlife, I just do not concern myself with those ups and downs and the peaks and valleys of our emotions. I just think we should go fishing and hunting, and we're not going to change what those critters do when we're not out there in the woods. And so there at night when I was out turkey hunting near dusk, I had a raccoon come right up this log I was sitting against, and he got within about 3 or 4 feet before I finally had to threaten him and put my shotgun in his face, and he backed off. And it kind of reminded me that, yeah, these predators never stop working, you know, they'll find those turkey nests and destroy them and eat their eggs. And I guess my response to people who don't like that as well, raccoons, they fluctuate, coyotes fluctuate, and they got to make a living. And I don't think shooting one or two of them every now and then is not going to make a big difference in the population impacts out there.
Yeah. Dean, you were going to say something. You raised your hand. You were going to say something.
Oh, I was just going to mention that if raccoons are having any impact on turkey numbers, and we really don't know if they are or if they're not, I would guess that with the way the state of the fur auctions, the prices for fur these days, a lot of people aren't trapping or hunting raccoons anymore. So it could well be that our raccoon numbers are up higher than they've been for a while because of the fur market the last 3-4 years.
Has been bad, yeah.
Yeah, it's been bad, yeah.
Makes sense. Matt in Madison has a question or comment. Matt, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. When I was a kid, I just remember a lot of biodiversity along the roadways, farm fields, et cetera, the different wildflowers. And then in the 90s, there was a lot of spraying herbicides by county workers and farmers spraying along their farm fields. And I just don't see the same amount of biodiversity along the roadways and farm fields anymore. And I'm just curious if the guests know of any programs like with the statewide to address the declining insect populations. And I'll take my call off the air because I'm driving.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Well, Tim Isaac, we start with you. Comments?
Well, biodiversity is definitely a problem, and as we've gone to just single species of a lot of the crops and things like that, I think one of the goals is to increase biodiversity. And I think some of the organizations, one that I'll mention is the Wild Ones, which
basically is really good about trying to get landowners and people to use native trees, native shrubs, native grasses, native flowers, and how beneficial they are to insects. You take a look at oak trees and all of the insects that they attract, and therefore then the birds and the wildlife that use them. And so that's really important. But there are a lot of good organizations like the Wild Ones, the Nature Conservancy, Madison Audubon Society, and there's many others, I think, that are trying to work to try and encourage people, and especially and private landowners. If you're a private landowner, to try and encourage you to put more native species on the property and be concerned with biodiversity. Yeah, I think rather than just one thing, and that's some of the problem we have with the big cornfields and being sprayed with herbicides, and anybody who's got private property, I'd say it's really good to encourage them to try and get back to native species. I think it's a concern.
Yeah. Yeah. Comments from Pat or Dean?
Larry, I could jump in here. This is Dean.
Yeah.
Tim started mentioning some groups, and that's where I was going to go, is just the number of national and state conservation groups that work on pollinators and prairie species and stuff like that. And I would just encourage, I guess I would, if I were to mention any, it'd be Pheasants Forever, National Wild Turkey Federation. I know Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever works hard. They've been working hard for a number of years on that particular topic. And, you know, I guess if I would suggest anything besides volunteering locally, maybe join a group like that and, you know, get involved that way.
Jeff in Delafield, let's go to you now. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. A very similar comment. I'm concerned, disappointed, whatever the word might be, when you see the destruction of fence rows between farm fields. It seems like every winter, spring, you just see more and more fence rows and tree lines and whatnot being removed, presumably for larger agricultural equipment. They don't want to turn the tractors or track vehicles, whatever, around. Maybe it's GPS-driven equipment. You see more tiling of the fields that, you know, they don't allow standing water. It just seems like we're doing more and more and more to destroy that habitat as opposed to protect it. And there's also tax laws at play. When you grow crops on land, you get a significantly reduced rate on property tax. And if you were to basically do the right thing and plant it in native grasslands or forest, so there's a lot of things going on in the state that are basically counter to native habitats and pollinators and native species, whatever. So, I mean, that's kind of my comment.
Yeah, Jeff, thanks a lot for calling. Pat, you were nodding in agreement
there.
Yeah,
that's where I was going to go with it. I understand the concerns about the roadsides, but I also understand on the roadsides, a lot of times counties and the state intentionally cut back all vegetation along the roadsides for safety reasons, and so it doesn't get shaded in winter and create, you know, traffic hazards. But where I see it, where I really saw it continually, is you go across central Wisconsin, like the caller said, in winter and spring, and see all these decades old fence rows just being bulldozed out and piled up and burned, you know, the wood piled up and burned. And I used to drive regularly between Waupaca and Madison, and it was a constant thing for years watching those fence rows being plowed out for more efficient farming practices. And then you look at we've had cutbacks in our conservation reserve program. A lot of good conservation efforts that the country undertook for nearly 70 years in encouraging people to maintain fence rows and not let the topsoil go blowing across the countryside all the time. We, basically, I can't really blame all the landowners for doing that when there's so many financial incentives to do it and increase your yields and make it more efficient to farm. But boy, I think our reckoning's going to come on that. It's just, I thought we should have learned that lesson back during the Dust Bowl era, and I think we did for a while, but then as humans do, we tend to get arrogant over time and thinking that we solve problems that people once worried about. And I'm not sure nature's, spoken on this one yet. I think we're going to see some problems coming down the road yet.
Larry, if I can just add a word that I'd agree that, but a couple of good organizations that are sort of trying to correct that. One is like the Prairie Enthusiast, trying to get more landowners to incorporate more prairie and biodiversity on the land. Another one is the Wisconsin Association of Forest Owners. They're working trying to get some of those tax laws changed, because if you want to, if you put cattle in your woods, which could be the worst thing from a natural resources standpoint, you pay a lower tax because it's taxed as agricultural land. And whereas if you were to let it grow up or manage it for woodlands, you're going to pay a higher tax. And so there's some good organizations that are trying to fight those trends, and we need to.
Yeah. And Jeff, thanks again for calling. Nathaniel in Madison, we'll go to you next. Hi, Nathaniel.
Hi. I saw this really cute video this morning of some stoats that were, abandoned and found in Britain and then returned to the wild. And I looked up stoats on Wikipedia and found that they, in fact, live here in the Great Lakes. In fact, there's many varieties. And yet I have never seen a stoat in my life. And so I was wondering, do people see stoats or they don't seem to be endangered or anything. So I was just wondering if your people had any comments on that.
Stoats. All right. Let's see. Who wants to take a shot at that? Tim, do you want to try?
Well, I'll be happy to take a try. And I have to admit, I do not know what a stout is. I honestly don't know. But let me just mention one thing, and that is that there is a really good organization, Journey North, and it sort of reverts back to what you were talking earlier about birds, seeing different birds, and also monarchs, that they monitor all these species coming back, and it's a really good way to get onto that and see where other people are reporting them. And maybe if people are reporting that or on eBird, I assume it's a bird. I don't know. I'd have to see if the other guys know anything.
No. Tim, Pat's got something for us.
Well, luckily, Mr. Google helped me out. A stoat is basically a weasel.
Oh.
Yeah, it's and I've seen them often when I hunt up in Ashland County during the deer season. One year we had a weasel hanging around in the cabin. I had to chase him out the cabin. And then later I found him up in my truck bed feasting on a deer carcass I had back there after butchering a deer. And I've seen them also, and I think anyone who hunts the North Woods very often, you'll see these little white handkerchiefs waving through the woods during deer season if there's no snow on the ground. And that's the weasel. And they are a fascinating little animal, very bold. And I know for the size of them, I would not want to mess with them. And they're from that same family as badgers and mink and martens and wolverines. And they are a cute animal.
Yeah, they are indeed. I've seen lots and lots of them deer hunting. Dean, go ahead.
Yeah, Larry, I'm just glad that you went to Tim and Patrick first, because if you'd gone to me first, I'd have had to ask somebody to draw me a picture of a stoat, or I would have asked, did he say stout? And then I would have suggested, let's try Guinness. That'd be my favorite.
Okay, there you go. Well, they are plentiful, but they're, I don't know. See, Nathaniel called from Madison. I can't remember if I've ever seen one in Madison itself, but I've seen a lot of them in northern Wisconsin, especially Bayfield County, where we got some property there. In the Shawamigan National Forest, tramping through there, you're going to see them as well. We had an email from Marilyn to ask if there is more being done to protect turtles when they cross roads. She knows drivers are being asked to be vigilant, and there are places where safety measures could be constructed maybe without major cost. And of course, May and June, That's the turtle egg laying time of the year, and oftentimes they're going to crossroads. Primarily, I think maybe to get the higher ground to lay their eggs. Pat, comment?
Yeah, this is one of these interesting topics. At least I find it interesting. And, you know, the Wisconsin DNR does have some, they do some mitigation work to actually build fences that go right into the right down into the ground around some of these high traffic areas where turtles cross a lot. There's one I know of over by east of Stevens Point, and there's another one I photographed over by in Wapaka around a dam to help block turtles from crossing this road. And what they do is they create this fence, and they run it all the way out past the area of the most likely to cross, and basically it directs the turtles right back where they came from. And hopefully what they do is eventually they'll get down into the like a culvert and get swept underneath the road so they don't get killed. And what I always find interesting, though, about this whole discussion, they have done research on this. And what's really sad is that when they've looked into it, they will see like about 3% to 6% of drivers intentionally run turtles over. They'll see them on the road and intentionally go out of their way to run them over. And why you'd want to run over a snapper, yeah, a painted turtle, or whatever, who knows? But there are people out there that, you know, like I say, I did an article about 2 years ago on this for the Meat Eater website, and it wasn't a Wisconsin phenomenon. It wasn't a Eastern or Western or Southern phenomenon. It's pretty much everywhere they looked at this across the country. There's only like 3 or 4 of the studies. They document that, you know, any reptile crossing a road, snake, turtle, that kind of thing, they tend to, or amphibians too, that people do these mean things and run them over intentionally.
That's sad. I know the DNR is really interested in obviously protecting the turtles. And if you're on a roadway where there are turtles crossing or you see some dead turtles, there is a form. You can go online to the Wisconsin DNR Turtle Conservation Program. And there's just a little form you can fill out to say where was this, where are you seeing this? And they will report, they will try to do something about it, I guess.
Larry, also in Madison, if there's groups or people that are looking for information on turtles, there is a turtle organization sponsored by Rebecca Christoffel, who I think you've had on your program before.
Yeah.
And she is really good on turtles and talking about turtles and things to do to help prevent turtles from being run over. And people could look on the website and find out some suggestions there, because she does some really good work with amphibians and reptiles and the turtles especially.
Yeah. Somebody emailed to ask if there's a difference between a cougar and a mountain lion, and are they in Wisconsin and the UP? Dean?
No difference. Same animal, different name. That animal, Tim or Pat, you may also know. I think there's probably about 6 or 7 names I could come up for for a mountain lion. But no, it's the same animal. And yes, we have them in Wisconsin and the UP. I think the last time I asked anybody from the DNR what they felt would be a reasonable number, they said, you know, like a half a dozen. We probably have a half a dozen mountain lions in the state at any time. And I think they usually record 8 to 10 sightings a year, confirm or verify 8 to 10 sightings a year of a mountain lion.
Yeah, we should clarify, too, that there is no proof of a breeding population, though. Every cougar so far, they've been able to document and verify. They've always been, basically, they're young males dispersing from South Dakota and in the western regions. And there's still, I don't think we even have, I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that there's no established breeding population in Minnesota or Iowa either. So we still have, I think we have a long ways to go before we'll ever see a breeding population in Wisconsin. These are typically young males out looking for females, and they're heading the wrong way.
Yeah, they're heading the wrong way. And some of them, I remember the one that went through Wisconsin, I think was finally killed out in New York, run over by a car or something in New York.
Yeah.
I
mean, Connecticut.
They can go a long, long way. And I think we could go a long, long way. I never did get to the fish story, so you guys are going to have to hang on to those fishing stories, and maybe the next time you're on, we'll start with fishing stories just to get it rolling. That's a lot of that. That's my charge for the next meeting. Thanks, Tim, Dean, Patrick. Really appreciate it. We'll look forward to another visit.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Tim Isley, freelance outdoor writer, one of the founding members of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. Dean Bortz, he's editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News, a great publication. And Pat Durkin, freelance writer and editor. So it's great to have them with us, and we'll have them back, and we can zero in on fishing stories that maybe the next time around.